Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Administrative Law and Regulation Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, February 8, 2013, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. We have two experts joining us for our telephone call today. We'll hear opening remarks from each of about 5 minutes or so, maybe a bit of exchange between the two of them, and then questions from the audience, so be sure to be thinking of your questions as you hear their opening remarks. Evan Armstrong is the General Counsel and Legislative Assistant for U.S. Representative Michael Kaufman of Colorado. Among other things, Evan Armstrong advises Representative Kaufman on immigration, veterans issues, energy, and natural resources. He also served as the president of the Federalist Society chapter for the Villanova Law School. Margaret Stock, our second expert, focuses her practice on immigration and citizenship law. She's a nationally known expert on immigration and national security laws and has testified regularly before congressional committees on immigration, homeland security, and military matters. And with that, let's get things started. Mr. Armstrong, the floor is yours.
Well, Dean, thank you for having me, and I appreciate being compared to an expert with Margaret Stock. But as you said, I work for Mike Kaufman of Colorado's 6th District, and I really appreciate the Federalist Society holding this conference or holding this call about the bill that we just introduced. With a little background, the congressman wanted to look at, you know, and how his position on the Armed Services Committee, he could be proactive on the immigration issue. And after researching, I came across actually Margaret, who had come up in Google searches when I was researching, and we found that there are ways beyond the existing proposals of the DREAM and the ARMS Act to really find a nexus with military and immigration. So the result of our conversations was to introduce H.R. 435, the Military Enlistment Opportunity Act. And the basis of this legislation is to expand the current military enlistment opportunities and the enlistment statute to allow two new categories of immigrants, one of which was immigrants who have currently resided in the United States lawfully for at least 2 years, and the other are individuals who have been approved and accepted under the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival Program, which folks may remember was created under DHS this past summer. So specifically under the bill, we think that it solves two nationally important issues. The first is the need to address manpower concerns that the military is facing due to lack of qualified candidates. Over recent years, we found out that there has been a reducing or a diminishing amount of qualified recruits in the United States. Recently, a 2009 study showed that 75% of young adults between the ages of 17 and 24 did not qualify for military service for a variety of reasons. The report highlighted a long-term need to expand the scope of potential recruits to fill military's manpower needs for the future. The second issue the legislation seeks to address is to find ways to integrate the DACA individuals or the DREAMers, as more folks know them as, into a normalized status. It makes sense, and it's the congressman's position that the individuals who have the desire and ability to serve in the U.S. military should be given the opportunity to do so. As of today, over 154,000 of these DACA individuals have been accepted under the program and given work authorization. So we feel that there is a significant amount of young people out there who could be qualified to serve in the armed services. Finally, the final piece that should not go overlooked is the legislation allows for non-immigrant visa holders to enlist in the military, as I mentioned, if they've resided in the U.S. continuously for at least 2 years with a lawful status. So this, for example, is a lot of H visas, J visas, and all those that folks may have heard of previously. This section of the bill was inspired by the the successful MAVNI program that's been in existence for the last couple of years, in which Margaret can talk about with much more detail, but that program has been very successful in allowing the military to recruit highly skilled individuals for certain positions, including cybersecurity and language, and folks with language abilities. As these emerging fields will continue to be important for the military, we think this this specific portion of the bill will be greatly beneficial to the armed services. So it is important to note that unlike the Arms Act, which was introduced last year, the Achieve Act in the Senate, and also the DREAM Act, that this bill specifically addresses a fundamental flaw in the enlistment statute currently on law. It broadens the statute to include more recruits, more qualified recruits, to help the military solve some of its manpower issues. So, so even though that there's a push for a comprehensive reform and there's a push for the DREAM Act, the congressman and believes seriously that the Congress should look at 435 as a standalone method to help the military with the manpower need, but also provide these additional avenues for some folks to have a path for earned citizenship and naturalization. So that was just a quick overview, but I'll let Margaret take over from here as and she can kind of fill in all the gritty details about what we've been working on the last month or so.
Okay, thanks very much, Evan. Dean, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. First, I want to reemphasize what Evan said. This is a standalone bill, and it complements whatever Congress plans to do with immigration reform. It's not part of immigration reform, and if immigration reform doesn't pass, we'll still need this bill. So it's definitely standalone, although it will complement immigration reform if it is passed. One of the things this bill does is address something that a lot of conservatives have spoken about. Senator Jeff Sessions, for example, and others have said that there is a pathway to citizenship through military service. Those remarks are interesting because there used to be a pathway to military service for undocumented immigrants, but that pathway no longer exists as a practical matter. In order to get into the military today, you have to be documented. You must have a valid Social Security number. You must pass background checks, including background checks with the Department of Homeland Security. Now, this bill would essentially enlarge the pool of eligible, highly qualified recruits for the U.S. Armed Forces, but it doesn't recruit people who are undocumented. It does recruit the deferred action for childhood arrivals people, but only if they have already been screened by the Department of Homeland Security. And the Department of Homeland Security is doing a fair amount of screening on these folks, including background checks, checks of all their documents, criminal records checks, and so forth. So the bill allows people who have passed that screening to attempt to try to enlist in the United States military. It does not change the enlistment standards for the U.S. Armed Forces. It only changes one enlistment requirement, the current requirement that people have green cards. It doesn't change service eligibility requirements affecting everyone who tries to enlist, such as physical fitness, medical, mental, character, educational, English language, and other requirements. It also doesn't reduce or change the minimum service periods defined in other laws, such as the 8-year statutory service obligation that everybody who joins the Army currently has. And those eligible to enlist under this bill still have to undergo the full range of background and security checks that apply to any military recruit. The bill doesn't open up or authorize a change in the end strength of the U.S. Armed Forces. It just gives access to a larger pool of people who will be eligible for slots in the military. And the bill still allows the services to be responsible for setting general and specific enlistment standards, such as minimum test scores and morals requirements, educational requirements, and so forth. So the services can adjust those as necessary to obtain the best possible recruits. One of the things I think people have missed in the immigration debate is that the failure to reform our immigration laws has created problems for the U.S. military. The military, since 2006, has limited enlistment to people who have green cards or people who are U.S. citizens or nationals, with some exceptions, including the MAVNI program that was started under the Bush administration and ran as a pilot in 2009 for 1 year and was restarted recently. So for the most part, the military services have been limited. They can't recruit somebody who's not a green card holder, even if that person's been in the United States legally for decades. And it's become very hard to get a green card. The complicated legal immigration system puts people on a pathway that is often more than a decade. So someone can be in the United States legally for more than a decade before they're eligible to get a green card. And by the time the person gets a green card, the person's too old for military service. Interestingly, undocumented immigrants are eligible for the draft, but they're not eligible to enlist voluntarily. So that adds another little twist to things. Historically, there has been a problem. In 2007, you may recall, when the economy was booming, the military services had a serious enlistment crisis where they were unable to find a lot of qualified recruits and had to up re-enlistment bonuses to dramatically high levels. In some cases, they were $40,000 bonuses available to people who were willing to join up in the military at that time and had the correct status that would allow them to join. With budget problems and so forth, the Pentagon simply can't afford to give those sort of astronomical bonuses to people to try to get them to serve. So what this bill does is expand dramatically the pool of people who are eligible to serve. Again, it only allows people to enlist if they've been in the U.S. in lawful status for at least 2 years or have been approved for deferred action for childhood arrival status by the Department of Homeland Security. And a note there, the DACA people, as they call them, have to have been in the U.S. for at least 5 years. So those individuals have 5 years of residence that's been verified by the Department of Homeland Security, and they've also been cleared as far as their background checks go and their criminal status. So they're pre-qualified, in a sense, to be good recruits for the U.S. military, although they'll still have to go through the same process every other recruit goes for. It should be made clear that unlawful immigrants are not eligible to enlist under this bill. It only allows people who are lawfully present in the United States, either because they're in DACA status that's been approved by the Department of Homeland Security or because they have been in some other lawful U.S. immigration status for at least 2 years. So undocumented immigrants are not allowed to enlist under this bill. It's also not an overseas enlistment bill. It doesn't allow people who are outside the U.S. to enlist. It doesn't allow short-term visitors or tourists to enlist. People have to have been in the United States legally for at least 2 years in order to enlist under the first prong of the bill, and they have to have been DACAs who have a five-year residence requirement in the United States in order to enlist. And again, all the potential enlistees must still meet all the other service enlistment requirements. They have to pass the background checks and security screenings and so forth. This bill will probably not open up military service to hundreds of thousands of people. That should not be an expectation because most people most non-citizens are not eligible for most military jobs. The bill simply enlarges the pool of non-citizens who are eligible to enlist for jobs that are open to non-citizens. And in the Army, just to give an example, there's about between 70 and 80 jobs that are open to non-citizens. They include things like infantry, truck driver, and dental technician. They don't include things like officer jobs, military intelligence, military police, judge advocate general, and so forth. So the bill doesn't allow non-citizens to enlist for jobs that are only open to non-citizens. The majority of the armed forces will still be U.S. citizens after this bill. It simply changes the citizenship requirement for the jobs that are open to non-citizens. So certain non-citizens who are legally in the United States can now enlist, just like a green card holder would be eligible to enlist. Now, the bill provides that people who enlist but don't have green cards will be given a rapid path to obtaining a green card, but they can lose their green cards if they fail to serve honorably for a period or periods aggregating 5 years. They have to register with U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, pay a filing fee, and file a form. That's currently, the fee is over $1,000 for this form. They have to pay that themselves. The military isn't going to pay that for them. They have to be of good moral character. They can't be ineligible for citizenship. They can't be removable for various serious criminal issues or for genocide, torture, extrajudicial killing, alien smuggling, drug violations, and so forth. They are allowed to naturalize or become citizens through military service. The bill does not change the regular military naturalization laws that exist on the books today. And those laws require people in peacetime to have a green card in order to naturalize through military service. In wartime, the law allows almost anyone to naturalize, but they have to have lawfully enlisted in the military in order to naturalize. Finally, in wrapping up, I should mention that this bill does allow the MAVNI program to continue. The MAVNI program, MAVNI is short for Military Accessions Vital to the National Interest, was a pilot program started under the Bush administration that ran for 1 year in 2009. It was then suspended by the Obama administration for a couple of years, but they started it up again. It's been a highly successful program, and it was responsible for recruiting immigrants like Sergeant Saral Shretha, who turned out to be the U.S. Army Soldier of the Year for 2012. He was an immigrant from Nepal of Gurkha heritage. He was in the process of obtaining a U.S. degree in computer science when he enlisted in the Army in 2009, and he's now obviously the top soldier in the Army for 2012, which was quite an achievement. So I'll end on the note that, again, this bill does not allow undocumented immigrants to enlist, and it is a standalone bill that complements anything that folks are doing on the immigration reform front. I'll end there.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both. This is Dean Reuter again. Let's open the floor to questions. In a moment, you're going to hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, if you have a question for either or both of our experts, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. So once again, if you have a question for either of our experts, push the star button and then the pound button on our telephone. Our lines are open. Margaret Stock, you mentioned that undocumented aliens are not eligible under this program. But did I hear you say that if you're undocumented and you apply, then you have an accelerated path to a green card? And then after that, you can enlist. Is that correct or not?
Well, if you're actually undocumented, meaning the government has no documentation of you, you don't have any immigration status, then if you're eligible for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and you have applied for that and been approved under that program for a work permit, then you would be eligible to enlist under this bill. But that requires you to go through this process with DHS through the DACA program. And you wouldn't be eligible to enlist until you had already been approved by the Department of Homeland Security for DACA. I think one thing I forgot to mention was that you can't enlist in the military today if you're undocumented. You do have to have a valid Social Security number in order to sign an enlistment contract, and you have to have a valid status with DHS. In fact, the military checks all of its enlistees who are foreign-born with the Department of Homeland Security to make sure that they have some immigration status and that DHS has a file on them.
Okay. I appreciate these descriptions of the bills. By the way, once again, to our audience, if you have a question, our phone lines are open. Push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. And let me ask either or both of you, what are the critics of this bill saying? What are the arguments against? You've laid out the pro side pretty well. Are there critics? Are they numerous? And what are they saying about the bill?
Sure, I'll handle that and then let Evan jump in. There are critics. One of the big critics I've heard comes from folks who say that there should be immigration reform that allows people to have a choice besides military service in order to get their status, their permanent status in the United States. So critics of the bill would say that there should be some pathway that doesn't involve military service. And, of course, the senators and congressmen who are working on immigration reform are trying to develop such a pathway right now. This bill is a bill solely aimed at military issues, though, so it would be inappropriate in this bill to put in something else that has something to do with people getting status through some other path besides military service. Evan, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, that's right. I'll just echo what Margaret said, is that the only opposition that we get, and really from the opposition of folks that prefer a comprehensive reform, it's not that they don't like the bill. That their just focus is to do the larger pathways for education and everything else. So really there's been very little opposition for the idea in general, but some members of Congress and their staff or some organizations have specific ways that they're trying to approach the immigration reform debate. So this is just one way. That's a small bill that would go through the Armed Services Committee primarily. Because it's a military bill that has these immigration aspects to it. So from the congressman's perspective, this was why he wanted to do something that he could get his hands on, because as a Marine veteran and someone who sits on the Armed Services Committee, this was just a kind of a no-brainer proposal that he thought made sense and was a small effective step kind of going forward in the immigration debate generally.
Right.
And then, Dean, the other criticism I've heard usually comes from people that aren't familiar with the military recruitment process, but who just have a reaction that, well, the U.S. military should only have U.S. citizens in it. And
ever been the case, Margaret?
No. In fact, we were at the lowest point of non-citizen participation in American history right now. It's interesting because it's paralleled, toughening up the immigration laws. That's made it harder for people to join. tough, making it harder for people to get green cards means that people are too old to join the military by the time they get a green card. But historically, we've had huge numbers of non-citizens in the military. In fact, in the 1800s, more than two-thirds of enlisted people were foreigners, mostly Irish. But, you know, that was a historical fact in the 1800s. It's just immigrants were the enlisted people in the military. And then in World War I, about 20% of the military were immigrants, mainly people who had just gotten off the boat, many of whom had immigrated to America to avoid being drafted in their home country. And they came to the United States as legal immigrants and immediately got drafted here to serve in the U.S. military. So we're actually at the lowest point of non-citizen participation in the military in history right now because of these restrictions that have been set up to say that you have to have a green card or you can't get in.
And you mentioned, Margaret, you mentioned in your opening remarks, I think, some restrictions independent of this bill, I think, on the jobs that non-citizens can hold in the military. Are those fairly recently imposed? In other words, we had a history of more robust participation by non-citizens, and they were less restricted at the time, or can you
yes,
talk about that?
Yes, in fact, well, we used to have a draft, and non-citizens were required to sign up for the draft, particularly if they were unauthorized. During the Vietnam War era, we drafted non-citizens, especially unauthorized immigrants, and they earned their citizenship by serving in the military during the draft period. But what's happened over the years is we've tightened up security clearance requirements. Security clearances are not available if you're not a United States citizen. And we've increased the number of jobs that require a security clearance. And they've also passed multiple laws saying that you have to be a U.S. citizen to be an active duty officer or to go to West Point and that sort of thing. So over the years, we have increasingly restricted certain jobs in the military to people who are U.S. You have to be a U.S. citizen to hold these jobs. And so the number of jobs has dropped. As I said, there used to be a lot more. There's more than 250 jobs in the Army, for example, and less than 80 now are open to non-citizens. And it looks like the numbers are going to be even lower in future years. So that these factors have all worked together to mean that it's harder and harder for non-citizens to get into the military. The bill does not change any of that. So this bill will not flood the military with lots of non-citizens because they're still going to have to pass all the gates. They're still going to be required to apply for a job that's open to a non-citizen. Later on, once they've proven themselves and they've gotten their citizenship, they can move into other jobs that require citizenship, such as like special forces, or they can apply for an officer commission and so forth. But they're going to have to prove themselves. And I think that's one of the attractions of this bill. It doesn't flood the military with a lot of people who wouldn't be otherwise qualified. It just opens up the pool and gives the military access to a lot more highly qualified people.
Okay. Again, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Our lines are open. Maybe a question for Evan Armstrong. Where are we procedurally with the bill? What do you think the prospects are? Can you talk about numbers of co-sponsors? And is there a similar bill on the Senate side?
Well, we just introduced it a couple weeks ago, so it's still in the beginning stages of getting support. Right now, we have three co-sponsors, one of which is Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, who's been one of the more outspoken Democrats in the House on immigration reform. He sits on the Judiciary Committee, and like I said in the previously, was that he is working on the DREAM Act, and that's one of his big proposals. But we are very happy to have him on board on this, and he's supportive of the idea as well. Also, we've had the National Guard endorse the idea as well. I think they believe, probably like Margaret does, that this is beneficial to the military. So we expect the armed services to be very vocal in their support down the line. From a legislative perspective, it currently has jurisdiction in the House Armed Services Committee as well as the Judiciary Committee, primarily in the Armed Services. So that's going to be our committee that we want to move the bill because it is primarily a military enlistment bill. So we've been working with the subcommittee staff on personnel issues to try to figure out how to go forward with this, as well as trying to contact with the Judiciary to see how this can fit in with their immigration hearings that they're going to be having this year under Chairman Goodlatte. So that's where we are right now. There is not a Senate co-bill, but I've reached out to the Senate and some offices over there to get their thoughts on it. So we'll wait and see what happens.
Okay.
And then, Dean, you asked about the similar legislation. If you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, on the Senate side, is there a similar bill?
Well, there isn't a similar bill to this one, but there is something called the ACHIEVE Act that was introduced late last year, and this bill is significantly different from the ACHIEVE Act. The ACHIEVE Act would create a new non-immigrant visa status called W and would give that status to the DREAM Act young people, but they have to go through a whole pile of steps in order to get and maintain their W status. And one of the problems with the ACHIEVE Act is, although it allows them to serve in the military, it doesn't help the military very much because it essentially encourages them to leave the military. They can't get a green card through the ACHIEVE Act until they've had 4 years of military service, and then they have to leave the military to get their green card. So that's going to create a big problem for the military because folks will be motivated to get out in order to get a green card. If they stay in, they don't get a green card. And I think that was a problem with the drafting of the bill. And then there was a bill on the House side, the Arms Act, that also addressed military service. But that one was problematical because, again, it only dealt with the DREAM Act people. It didn't open up the pool of highly qualified, legally present people who don't have green cards. And the Arms Act didn't show familiarity with the process of military enlistment. It essentially promised to give a temporary status to hundreds of thousands of young people, but they only had 9 months to join the military, and all of them were going to be trying to join the military because the only pathway they would have would be through military service. Even if they weren't qualified and couldn't get into the military, they would revert to being undocumented immigrants, and they had exactly 9 months to do this, which didn't fit with the military's recruiting cycle, which is on a fiscal year. And, you know, there might be, if you got your card one day, you might not be able to get into the military in 9 months. There might not be a slot open for you, at which point you would revert to being an undocumented immigrant once again. And so that was problematical. So this bill has a lot more merit than those other bills, in terms of the military angles anyway.
All right. Looks like we have a couple questions from our audience. Why don't we go to the first caller now?
Hello, this is Bob Davis in Maine. From what you've said thus far, it would appear as though there has been an intentional policy of trying to limit and actually discourage the number of immigrants who would be joining the military and also restricting the number of jobs that they could be a part of. What has been the rationale for that? Is it increasing problems with thoughts of security, or I don't understand why the encumbrances and the increasing number of them?
I think that's a good question, and the best answer I can give you is I think it was inadvertent, and it happened because there's been a propensity to put tougher and tougher requirements into place, and people didn't always realize the impact of some of these requirements. So, for example, for certain jobs in the military, people would say, oh, you need to have a security clearance for that. So somebody would put in a requirement that you have to have a security clearance for that job. Well, that's great, and it's wonderful that you need a security clearance for that job, but that means that no non-citizen can have that job because they're required to have a security clearance. So things like that started happening, and then more and more jobs would be restricted. You know, you have to have a clearance for that job. We're reducing the number of jobs that are open to people who can't get a clearance. And so that kind of thing happened. I'm not sure it was actually intentional. And interestingly, nobody's ever touched the draft laws. The draft laws still require you to register for the draft if you're a non-citizen and you're in the United States without permission. You're required to register for the draft. You can go to the Selective Service webpage, and they have a big banner that says, attention undocumented males, you have to register for the draft. But even though they're required to register for the draft, we don't have a draft, and they're barred from enlisting voluntarily. The 2006 change was made seemingly without any knowledge of the impact it would have on the non-citizen population's eligibility to enlist. It looks like they changed the enlistment law in 2006 simply to have a unified enlistment law, and they didn't pay attention to the immigration implications of it at all when it was passed. So one of the great things about this bill is it fixes that error that happened over the years. And again, I'm not sure it was intentional.
Yeah, so if in fact it was inadvertent, that would explain the lack of opposition to the bill that you're suggesting pass.
Right. Well, I think most Americans are aware that non-citizens have served in the military for a long time, and again, Jeff Sessions is one of the people who spoke on the Senate floor and said he thought there was a path to citizenship through military service already. I think because he was unaware that you can't get into the military if you don't have a valid Social Security number, and you know, you have to clear a DHS check. And all these systems, of course, have been set up over the years, but people weren't thinking about the overall impact it would have on military manpower needs.
So the only real opposition is from those people who want a bigger slice of the pie vis-a-vis immigration. They want it broader than what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I think they're saying that this bill only addresses military stuff, and they would like to see a pathway that doesn't require people to serve in the military.
Yeah,
that position has some merit. Go ahead, Evan, sorry.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, Margaret. I just wanted to reiterate that it's not necessarily opposition insofar as it's just they're looking for additional or broader paths. So that's really – it's not just that they don't think it's a good idea, that they're just looking, like you said, for the broader slice for immigration reform. But we've had very little credible argument against the bill in itself. So that's a positive that we're happy that has occurred over the last couple of weeks, and we hope that it will continue.
Thank you very much.
All right, we have another caller question. If you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button. Before we go to our next caller, let me make an announcement. As I mentioned on yesterday's Teleforum conference call, next week we've got a busy calendar for our Teleforum calls. On Monday at noon Eastern time, we're going to feature National Review's Ramesh Panuru, who is going to be speaking with author Jonathan Last, and they'll be discussing Jonathan Last's book on the effects of population on law and policy, the economy and culture. That's Monday at noon. Then on Tuesday at 2 p.m., we'll be talking about the Supreme Court's Georgia Pacific case, which concerns the amount of judicial deference to the EPA on one particular area of law. That's Tuesday at 2 p.m. Then on Thursday at noon, we'll be looking at a dispute between the city of Tombstone, Arizona, and the National Park System as they contest Tombstone's access to National Parks land to maintain its damaged water lines. That is Thursday at noon. And then Friday at 1 p.m., we're going to discuss the Bronx household case, which is a Second Circuit case that concerns the after-hours use of school facilities. And that one is Friday at 1 o'clock. And as always, I invite our guests to check the Federalist Society website under the Teleforum heading for a schedule of our upcoming calls that changes and gets added to quite often. Let's go to our next caller.
I have two questions. First, are there any estimates on the number of people who are potentially going to apply to this? Because I can't imagine the numbers being very large as compared to other programs like Deferred Action, where most of the registrants are looking at college and such. And secondly, on the issue of selective service, yes, the website does say that all illegal aliens between 18 and 25 must register. But my question is, what if they did not? Is there any repercussions for those who apply through this bill, should it become law, if they failed to register, or do they get a pass for that violation as well?
Okay, well, I'd be happy to answer. Let me answer the second question first, because it's a little bit easier. It's a crime not to register for selective service, and they get denied immigration benefits if they fail to register. And this has actually been a big issue with the DREAM Act, because the latest versions of the DREAM Act bar people from any benefits under the DREAM Act if they haven't registered for selective service. So if they miss the window of registering, they're actually permanently barred from the DREAM Act. If they're 27 and they never registered, that takes them out of eligibility in the latest versions of the DREAM Act. So I think that's a really good question. Unfortunately, a lot of undocumented immigrants don't know about the requirement. So legal service providers who deal with those communities try to get them to register. As far as the numbers go, again, the military is not opening up any, we're not increasing the end strength of the military with this particular bill. So what this bill does is it simply creates a larger pool of people. Now, there are estimates about the pool of long-term, lawfully present people who are in the United States but don't have green cards but are trying to get them through the legal process, which can take upwards of 10 years in some cases. And those estimates are that there are several million of those people in the United States. And I'll just give you an example of one of them. Somebody whose parents are here on a treaty trader investor visa because they own a small business. The children born outside the U.S. are also here on a treaty trader dependent visa, and they keep that visa as long as their parents own the business and as long as they don't turn 21. When they turn 21, they have to switch to get some other kind of visa if they want to stay in the United States. So a lot of them will go to college. They'll switch to an F-1 visa. After they finish college, they'll try to get an H-1B visa. Then they'll try to get an employer to sponsor them and so forth. But usually in cases like that, it takes upwards of 10 or 15 years for them to get a green card. And they're not eligible under current law to enlist in the military until they get their green card, at which point they're probably too old for military service. So that population, which this bill would, the bill would allow those folks to enlist in the military if they can show they've been lawfully in the U.S. for at least 2 years, and that population is probably several million people, but they won't all pass the wickets necessary to get into the military. If you have a pool of about 2 million people, you're probably looking at maybe 15,000 enlistment contracts that get written out of that pool ultimately. So it's not a huge number of people. As far as the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals go, again, that pool looks like it's several hundred thousand people, but they have to pass all the wickets. So if they're not physically fit, if they can't pass the test, if they, you know, don't, they have some disqualifying medical condition, they're not going to get into the military. And so I expect that there may be a few thousand of them that are eligible to serve. Now, they have indicated an interest in doing this. There's actually a group out there that's been lobbying to try to allow the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival people to enlist in the military. Mainly it's made up of folks who participated in junior ROTC in high school. It turns out there's large numbers of undocumented immigrants who've participated in junior ROTC units in U.S. public high schools and have done quite well. A lot of them are commanders of their units and so forth, and they see military service as a very attractive career option and would like to join the military. So this bill would let folks like that join if they can otherwise qualify.
All right,
yeah,
so
just to piggyback on that, in that as Margaret said, the requirements to get into the military and everything and DHS will whittle down the numbers, so it's not an overwhelming amount of folks that are going to be able to enlist. But we have been lobbied, as Margaret said, by quite a few young people that would be considered the dreamers of the DACA that want to participate in military service. A group which is called the Dream Action Coalition, which has endorsed the bill, is very vocal about they have a website called letusserve.org. So we feel like this is a great opportunity for a lot of folks that want to, have the desire to represent their country as a member of the armed services. So we think it's going to be a good number of people.
Yeah, I guess that's the issue, is the difference between eligibility numbers and people who are actually interested. And I imagine the interest is even smaller than the potential number of people who are eligible. But on the other question, I was hoping the staffer could respond. Is there going to be anything added to this bill specifically on the issue of selective service, or is the decision not to apply for that not going to hamper a person's eligibility for this bill?
Well, we hadn't had plans to add anything like that to the legislation because we wanted to keep it as simple as possible. As you may know, whenever you try to add things to a bill, that just weighs it down even more.
True.
This is a simple kind of clean fix to what Margaret had referred to as in 2006 as kind of a faulty change that they did. So that's really what our goal was to make this small change in the enlistment statute to provide these wider opportunities for certain immigrants, and then to allow the military to kind of fulfill their manpower needs.
Well, I guess I just want to make sure this isn't a way around that, the fact that citizens, male citizens 18 to 25, would be held accountable and an illegal immigrant would not be for failing to register.
Well, it's certainly not the intent is to bypass that requirement.
Yeah, and I don't think it's really an issue because this bill only affects people who join the military. So they would be, if they had failed to register and they join the military, they get an exemption because they're in the military already. So I don't think it's really an issue. It's the same thing with people who serve in the military who are U.S. citizens and then forget to register. If they've served in the military, they can avoid that problem.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Looks like we have another question. Again, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone after this question. Our lines will be open. go ahead, caller. You might have your phone on mute. If you have your own telephone on mute, you need to unmute your telephone. Sounds like we might have some technical difficulty. We'll see if that caller can we can't hear the caller. Again, if you have your telephone on mute, you need to unmute your telephone. And while we're waiting to see if we can get through to that caller, let me ask you about the policy memo, any relationship between the Janet Napolitano policy memo and this bill. Either one of you could respond to that if you would. And by that Janet Napolitano policy memo, I mean what a lot of us have been calling the Obama executive order.
Margaret, you want to take that?
Sure, absolutely. The policy memo is the one that was issued on June 15th of 2012 that allows certain people who've lived in the United States since June 15th, 2007 to apply for deferred action for childhood arrivals. And that's the policy memo to which Dean was referring. This bill does have a relationship with that because what it does is allow people who have applied for deferred action and have gotten a work permit through that policy memo, it allows them to attempt to join the military. And if they do join the military successfully, they are eligible to apply for a green card under the special provisions of this bill. Again, they have to serve honorably for 5 years or they can have their status revoked. They're eligible to get citizenship through the normal statutes, but typically in peacetime that requires them to get a green card first and then apply for citizenship. And, of course, they have to do the usual things that any military enlistee would do, pass all the right screenings and so forth. And then to become citizens, they have to pass the citizenship test and show good moral character and so forth and so on. So there is a relationship between the bill and the memo. The memo allows these people to get a DHS file and a Social Security number, which would then allow them to enlist in the military if they can qualify for military service.
Evan, did you have anything on this point?
No, I think that was said perfectly, Margaret.
Okay. Well, it looks like we've exhausted the audience questions. We still have a few minutes left. Do you guys want to express, you want to wrap up or continue the discussion, express any final thoughts? Want to start with Evan Armstrong?
Sure. I just want to reiterate that going forward, the congressman believes that this is a small, effective step that should be done to correct a wrong or correct a mistake that was done in 2006 within the enlistment statute. As someone who is on the Armed Services Committee and a Marine veteran, this is an important issue for him going forward. Certainly believes that it could be a part of a larger immigration reform bill, but as a standalone, it's an effective legislative proposal that should be adopted.
Margaret Stock, you get the final word.
Sure. I just want to say again that this is a great complement to whatever immigration reform the House and Senate are going to come up with. I think people have not appreciated that our failure to fix the legal immigration system has meant that the armed forces are affected because the green card pool has essentially become flat and people can't get green cards anymore when they're still old enough to join the military. So this bill will fix that, and it will also allow the military to have access to people whom private employers are currently able to hire. It doesn't seem right that private employers can hire individuals, but not the U.S. Armed Forces, particularly when these people are highly skilled or U.S. educated and will fill critical shortages in the U.S. military. So I think this bill is a necessary fix to meet our nation's national security need for access to top quality recruits. And it's great that the congressman is moving the bill that would give the U.S. Armed Forces the explicit authorization to enlist these folks.
Very good. Well, Margaret Stock, Evan Armstrong, thank you both for joining our call today. We certainly appreciate your insights and your expertise. And to our audience, I invite you to join us for our next Teleforum conference call on Monday at noon. Again, then we'll be talking about Jonathan Last's book on population law and culture. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.